I'm joined by Chris Thomas, a sitting member for the House of Keys of Douglas Central, seeking re-election in the upcoming general election to the House of Keys. Now, Mr. Thomas, you've had a interesting time in Keys this last 5 years. I'd like to start with a question. Are you a different politician now than you were 5 years ago?
No, I'm the same politician now as I was 5 years ago, even 8 years ago when I started in the House of Keys, had the privilege to be elected in the May 2013 at a by-election. Obviously, I'm a maturer politician. Obviously, I've got scars from those 8 years, but I've also learned a great deal.
So have your priorities changed?
I think the basic priorities are the same, but now I've got a different policy agenda and different actions need to be done because we're 8 years on.
So you're an analyst, you focus on the detail, and you're quite drawn in by procedure sometimes, some might say. Do you think people understand you?
Oh, I don't agree with that characterisation of drawing in on detail, a focus on detail. Certainly, it's the case that to be successful in politics, three things matter. The first one is you've got to be the right person, and that's what you're asking about now. Secondly, you've got to be a signpost for where policy needs to go. So you've got to have analysis of the current reality and what a vision about how the future will be better. And thirdly, you've got to have politics. You've got to have tactics to get us there. And in each of those things, I'm very clear about where I need to go. So you are right. Back in 2011, 12, 13, I identified some major structural flaws in Manx public policy. And in some cases, the whole of my 10 years, the 2 years preparing, and then since being elected, have been focused on those certain campaign areas. Do you want to give me an example?
I'd like to ask. Yeah, go on. Give us an example.
So gas regulation, the first question I ever asked in the Tim Ward Court in June 2013 was about where the economic regulation energy bill was, because that was planned after a report in a recommendation back in 2011. Ever since 2013, I've been trying to knock heads together at the Office of Fair Trading in Council of Ministers and have eventually been successful. We now have economic regulation. So if you want to describe that as being attentive to detail and diligent, I accept that completely.
But you weren't at the helm when we're at this latest juncture with Manx Gas, where they are facing, you know, they've got regulation where the customers are in a better place. It seems like you pushed that as far as, and then it just stopped and the next person came and took it
off. I don't think so. I think even recently in Tim Ward, the minister acknowledged that I've been leading it all along. So I asked a question back in June 2013 when the gas regulation agreement, voluntary agreement in 2015 was finally put in place by the then council ministers. I resigned from the Office of Fair Trading over that very issue. In 2016-17, I set up a regulatory review. The Chief Minister unfortunately knocked that off course because he decided unilaterally to set up his gas regulation committee, which took things in a wrong direction. Negotiated with Ancala, got to know the counterparts quite well. And crucially in that, when you're negotiating somebody, you've got to respect the counterparts, which is what I do a lot. And also, secondly, you've got to get inside their heads to put together a win-win situation.
So you think you created the conditions for this success?
And I think I actually also executed the final resolution, because it was my resolutions in Tim Ward in June, in October and November and February, and now again in May, that have steered government eventually into the right direction. And now we're in a good place with an economic regulator, which could also now go beyond gas into electricity, into transport even.
Well,
better Office of Fair Trading, and I think Council of Ministers is finally understanding that politicians shouldn't directly be involved in regulation.
Well, we will see what happens. Now, that's one of the policies that you say you've successfully brought in to make people's lives better, the work there with the gas regulation. Now, what else have you done in your time as minister, particularly here? What have you done to improve people's lives?
The most important thing for most people is their household and the lifestyle, and basically the amount of money they have and how much enjoyment and quality of life they have from that amount of money. And so the economy wasn't working for enough people in the Isle of Man. It works for some people and many people hugely, but it doesn't work for enough people. So my focus has always been on making growth more useful.
And that, so how have you done that?
Well, that was a campaign I started back in 2014-15, and at that time the then government promised that they would make growth more useful, and not sure they ever really did, but after the election had a chance to do several things. So firstly, calculating the living wage, the living income standards, what it costs to have a proper income that most people would regard as being acceptable for a pensioner or for a single person or for having
Well, you worked that out, but government didn't adopt it with its own staff.
It did adopt it with its own staff, so it hasn't got a lot of publicity, and it's actually after my thing, but basically it was working on it for a long, long time, and there's nobody in government now who earns less than
But not me. With all its staff, not with its contractors.
So now the next stage is to make sure that it goes into the procurement process, which is ultimately under Treasury, which is not my direct fear, but every member of the Public Service Commission at the end of the job evaluation and grading system process earns at least the living wage.
But if a living wage is enough for a person to live a good life, shouldn't that be the minimum wage?
And in the next 4 or 5 years, I do believe...
Is that a priority?
I do believe that the minimum wage should approach the living wage as calculated for a single person, but also people should come to understand that if you're a pensioner or if you've got children, it costs a lot more than that to live, and that should also be the benefit of inside the benefit system. Another example would be that I put in place a 3-year pay arrangement for the public service, which I believe influenced the private sector, and we have actually now begun to get median incomes, median earnings growing to make up for a decade of lack of growth in median.
Is there a lot of work still to do there?
There is a lot of work still to do, and we've now got to address some of the structural issues that are holding people back in their own personal satisfaction, and they would be the same as they have been for decades, and they're some of the challenges that we really need to meet. One of those is housing. You know, we've got to understand what particularly young people have as aspirations for housing, and create products and the possibility for them to have the right sort of housing that they want over the next 20 years. But alongside that, we've got to create opportunities for older people to give up some of the excess space they seem to be adopting. If you get what I mean. So we do need a national housing strategy. At the same time, you can't have high earnings, given that we have a predominantly private sector economy, unless we have the trade and the economic opportunities for employers to employ people and pay them high wages. And one of the biggest factors in the Isle of Man for preventing that would be the costs of transport and also the availability of transport. And that's why things like the steam packet purchase is one of the more successful parts of this last government.
Let me just ask you about the steam packet purchase, since you've raised it. You stated that you actually opposed nationalisation of air and sea services, but you supported the steam packet purchase. Why? Why that change?
When did I say I opposed it?
Questions to Manx Radio in 2016 before the election.
Okay, well, I basically at that time...
Because you said government should be involved in the operation.
At that time, we were still... So I'd been involved for 2 years in the working group based on that. And at that time, my policy definitely was, which appears in my manifesto, was that essentially we should have a competitive tender for the provision of the service.
You didn't expect government to be...
I've got to be honest, I didn't expect for it. I didn't campaign for it in 2017, 2018, but it came to be the situation. That essentially the only way to...
Was that a transparent decision?
Larger than it would have been if people like me hadn't have been in government. So we did publish all of the financial analysis that we had. We did publish options and alternatives. But ultimately, you can't have things like borrowing money and the purchase of assets made on the floor of a parliament. You know, no country in their right minds would do that. You've got to...
No, but you do have proper public debate about a massive policy decision, which didn't happen.
We did have two or three steam packet debates, and ultimately...
They were a formality, weren't they?
We put in place a sea services agreement, which was approved by Tim Wood. But one thing I will say on this is I'm already disappointed with the way that the sea services agreement is operating. So, for instance, the Department of Infrastructure, which I see as primarily responsible for the sea services agreement, has admitted recently it hasn't actually forced the steam packet to provide information about its compliance. And as I understand it, the local employment of seafarers employed through the Guernsey company, the Department of Infrastructure doesn't seem to think that they're covered by the Sea Services Agreement, where to me it's absolutely vital for the island in which I live that industries like seafaring have people living on them. So what we don't want to end up with is people flying into the Isle of Man for a 2-week shift and then flying away again, and that's something that I will be campaigning on a lot. You are right. Naturally, originally, I would have hoped that the private sector could have provided the capital, and we do still have the financing of the steam packet, and I do hope that the next stage of the steam packet, which is when we refinance the bond and we go to finance the ships, I do hope that somehow the private sector is more involved, because ultimately the state shouldn't be running this everything in the island.
We will have a change of tack now. Who should be the chief minister in the next administration?
That's a bit of a Manx obsession with the personality of the chief
minister.
But
you have said previously that they should declare beforehand.
They should declare beforehand.
Should you not declare who you think it should be beforehand?
And we'll have a motion in June, Tim Wild, thinking about
But why wouldn't you tell me now?
Because you're obsessed, like the Manx public seems to be, on the personality.
Well, it's our only chance to understand who our leader might
be. Because what the law says in the Council of Ministers Act is the chief minister has to be appointed within 1 month of the general election. The tradition and the standing orders put in place that tradition have been that the chief minister is elected first by Tim Wild. Using my new law, it'll be by the House of Keys this time. Mm. What I want is in October and November, I want to have some policy debates in the House of Keys and Tim Wild before we get to the stage of appointing.
Do you think that will happen?
Well, let's see how he goes. But it's a major election issue for me because, as I said, there's three parts to politics. Number one, there's the people involved. Number two, there's what you're trying to achieve with public policy. And number three, there's the tactics. Mm. And to me, Howard Quayle has always had a weakness because ultimately he was third in the Manx Radio poll for the next chief minister. He came second in the middle constituency election, and thirdly he only ever got 12 of the elected members to vote for him as chief minister. He's not the sort of politician who does signpost what he believes policy is. He believes he's the best person to be chief minister. And what I want is policy and people debated together as the chief minister.
Would you be the chief minister, Mr. Thomas, if you're asked to be?
I'd be part of a team, as I wanted to be. So my last 5 years has been in...
So you would be a minister then, to clarify for us?
I want to change public policy, and government has a great role in changing public policy. Backbenchers can do it a lot, and in the Isle of Man they have done it a great deal since 2018.
So that's just to clarify, that's a yes to a ministerial position, but not to being the chief minister.
I don't even think we should call the chief minister in the future. I think
that's a separate conversation.
It's important for my campaign, though, Ewan, because I believe that we should more have the Gaelic system of the chief minister is more like the first minister, first amongst equals.
But isn't the phrase that describes the chief minister? That's used first among equals.
It is,
isn't
but
it?
It's not the reality.
So what's the difference?
Our last couple of chief ministers have come to think that they're in some sense as presidential, and you know they talk about my government and my council of ministers. No. The Council of Ministers is a collective bound by collective responsibility. The ministers, you know, they talk about Team Tim Wild, but the ministers should actually see themselves as being a collective group with a collective view of policy. Policy matters.
So has this proposal been crystallised by your experience as a minister?
Yes.
And how you had to take part in collective responsibility?
Yeah, so basically the first thing that particularly Mr Cannon, Mrs Beecroft and myself did back in 2016, 2017 was we got the government code changed, whereby the only thing that were covered by the collective responsibility beyond the normal five exemptions for constituency business, moral positions and so on, was if it was part of the programme for government, if it was in the budget, and if it were, or if it was determined to be of national importance. And the issue over which I was sacked was none of those three things.
Do you regret speaking out on that issue and not being a decision maker through COVID in the same way?
No, I wasn't a decision maker in March and April and May. I mean, I was excluded. I've got the great glory of never having had a Jeff the Mongoose cartoon made about me, and I've never appeared on the communications stage. I took lots of the legislation through during COVID, and I did lots of the detail behind the scenes. But no, I disagreed with some aspects.
Do you regret speaking out now you've had some time to...
I'm a principal politician.
Well, on that issue, if you were to be welcomed into a cabinet again and chosen by peers... or even in any of those scenarios, could you be trusted on an issue of collective responsibility in the future?
As long as the team is put together in the right way. So as I've tried to start a couple of times, but basically my experience of 2016 to 2021 has been in thirds, okay? The first third, the first 18 months or so, was when I genuinely believed that we had a really good team and we were really well working together around the programme for government. It became clear to me in the second third that that wasn't quite the case. You know, the chief minister had started setting up his committees and personalities were coming into the fore in terms of personal agendas. And then the last third has been very, very satisfying for me because I could go back to the basics of what matters for transformation, housing, the economy, making sure that we have a proper poverty strategy.
Well, did you fail then in your third quality, your politics? Did you fail to play the game well enough to address those issues while you were a minister?
I don't think I failed, but I was caught out by some structural aspects and some aspects of tradition in the Isle of Man, and I hope that this election can be used to change those aspects of conservative tradition. So in other words, the most important thing in the election, as always, will be the economy, healthcare, education, creating opportunities, getting the balance between what's done here and what's done across, right? But ultimately, we still need some constitutional reform in the Isle of Man. I've made great progress. This Council of Ministers will be formed according to the amendment that I took through, the legislation I took through in December 2017. The election will be fought in a different way. I took the elections law through. There are still the Timwell Commissioner for Administration is an important addition that led to the Auditor General, and we've still got some progress to make. And I hope the process of running the election, I hope this idea that I'm espousing now catches off, and it'll be an important part of my manifesto, which I'll launch in the next 6 weeks.
What's the most difficult position you've been in the last 5 years politically? What's been the most difficult decision you've had to take?
That period, March, April, May. So I kept saying to people, my confidants, the people who helped me, you know, should I be resigning from the Council of Ministers? And people kept saying to me, no, you stay there and you change it. You're more valuable to the Manx people, public inside. In the end, I was fired for a reason I shouldn't have been fired for. But that was very difficult for me because I, you know, as a principled politician, if I don't agree with some of the things that are going on, should I be staying here and pretending I agree? And it was very, very tricky for me.
Well, we'll talk about Douglas, of course, because we're running close to the end of time here. But Douglas, what will you do to improve Douglas? Because you talk a lot about brownfield sites again in the last preparation for elections. You talked about brownfield sites. Now, moves have been made, but it all seems like plans and paperwork and exactly. Bodies and corporations. Douglas looks pretty much the same. Exactly. So what's happened there?
It is. And again, we got sucked off into institutional change and the Manx Development Corporation. Everybody believes it's going to be the transformation. It's not going to happen unless we get the right buzz around Douglas, because it's the market and it's people spending. That's going to
That's your job to do that.
I don't think so. I don't think it's my job to transform the economy. I think people normally see that as a treasure.
It's your job to oversee planning changes.
Yeah, and planning changes, you know, failed. I voted against the area plan for the East because there was so much talk about what was going to happen, but the actual changes to housing policy and the actual changes to the comprehensive treatment areas we haven't actually seen as yet. Community infrastructure levy, it's a bit too long, but that's a fundamental issue for Douglas, actually changing things on the ground. A second big issue for Douglas is to do with the houses that are vacant. We've got a huge number of buildings that are vacant with flats and rooms in them, and we haven't got practical policies as yet.
Well, that was supposed to be addressed, surely, in the area plan.
No, because they kept saying the area plan couldn't address all of these issues. That's why we need to have a housing policy.
Well, why didn't you step away sooner? Because you oversaw that whole thing.
Because people kept saying to me, Chris, try and do it from the inside. And
see how, as a lay member of the public, that might be really confusing that Chris Thomas, for years, backs an area plan, then at the back end, suddenly turns around and says...
It's very, very logical. The reason I backed it was because it had to be done properly. And you can't trust politicians with that sort of thing. You can trust me. I'm a politician of integrity. But, you know, the area plan for the South went wrong because of political interference, and that broke in the last few months. It broke since I went down. It's very tricky to stop politicians going behind closed doors and interfering with things, firstly. And secondly, the reason the area plan for the East became insufficient was because there hadn't been sufficient development in housing policy, in transport policy, in brownfield site policy. So basically, the rest of government let down the planners, in my view, and that's the position I put out very clearly in June.
Another big issue of yours was rates reform. It seemed to get... fairly far. Timwell even approved it, but we know Timwell's approved rates modernisation before.
Exactly.
Are you going to pick that back up?
Very much. I was let down in three or four issues I got through in October 2019. I think the Council Ministers was gobsmacked. We got through rates reform, got through needs testing, means testing, got through social care, residential and care home. And I think these are all issues that weren't supposed to come up, and they were supposed to be defeated in Timwell, and we've taken them up and we've got to have a concerted effort, a consensus inside Timwell to put all of those issues back on the table. And back to the last local issue in Douglas, there was a very successful campaign in Douglas for 20 mile per hour speed limits around the residential areas.
You'd support that?
And basically, I've taken it further than that, worked with Anne Corlett very closely, and the Department of Infrastructure have got some incredibly imaginative but also incredibly controversial proposals that I think they'll be launching before the election to do with our streets and the direction of travel. And we've got to start a conversation about how our streets are used and to the extent that they're there for the people who live there or they're there as places for commuters to get through very quickly.
Well, we'll have to see those come forward. Now, you've got 45 seconds. Why should the people of Douglas Central choose to back you again, Chris Thomas?
I'm the right person. I made a pledge back in 2013, evidence-based integrity, preventing alternatives and all the information about the alternatives and communicating quite well on the internet and in person. Secondly, I have a clear indication in my Isle of Man 2020 of a 7-year plan for improvement of public policy. And thirdly, I'm a maturer politician now and can manage the tactics better based on my personality, my political experience, to actually deliver the policies that are signposted in my new manifesto, which is a policy agenda with priorities, planned priorities for the future.